This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. Mixed trials are over and done with. NZ Bridge has written up the names in black and white. You can check out. Barry made it to the semi-finals and I lost my $2.
4 for 5.9. And well done to the winners. Not without a bit of drama. Halfway through the final, one of the players got taken ill and they had to concede the match. So the Barrington team were the winners of the trial and they are going to China. Ian Barrington and Fuchsia Wen, Graham Tufnell and Jan Alabaster with a third pair yet to be added. The losing finalists are going to the World Championships in Denmark. So that's Michael Weir and Pam Livingston, Leon Mayer and Jan Cormack, and Tim Pan and Lysandra Zing have been added as the third pair. So well done to them, and good luck overseas.
Good luck, all right.
I was tuned into BBO to be watching the final, and nothing happened. Well, I got to see a couple of sets. They didn't play the second half.
It was pretty tight throughout the whole weekend. I certainly enjoyed following the live results, but disappointed that we couldn't figure out what was happening. I hope Jan feels better.
A couple of the matches ended up being a bit of a blowout with big margins, but the others were quite close.
Well, good luck to them all.
So 80 boards, quite often just one or two boards was the difference out of 80. So yeah, still a little bit of luck in bridge. Obviously, you've got to play well enough to be within range. You know, sometimes just one board makes all the difference. And you don't worry, there were plenty where we could have made a difference.
Right. You have to play behind screens again, so you get used to that pretty quickly, don't you?
I really enjoy playing behind screens. I find it very relaxing. You're just sitting there in your own little world, bidding your hands out. Occasionally the screen comes up and you play a hand. It's a lot more relaxing than you would think.
Oh, okay. That's done and dusted. The big tournament this weekend is the South Island Pairs.
How many pairs in that, Mariana?
72 so far. Closing date is this Wednesday at 4 p.m. So there's still some time for people to get their name in.
You think they'll get up to 80?
Well, it's not going to take much.
No, it's not. They may well do. It's pretty, nice pretty popular. So it'll be fun to play them. And big field.
I'm not playing the two-day event. You're playing the two-day event, aren't you?
You're off to Franklin for the Swiss Pairs?
Yep, on a Sunday I can only put one day in this weekend. Going there, and they've actually got 40 pairs, that's face-to-face, and their close-off is on the 20th, so you've got a little bit more time. If you do want to go and play face-to-face in Auckland or Deep South Auckland, Franklin's the place to be, and they don't close their entries until this Thursday. There's still plenty of time, but 40 entries, they must be pretty happy with that.
Are those the only two events being held? Cromwell have got their intermediate pairs and junior pairs on, and Fielding have got a 5A on the Sunday. Masterton have got an intermediate pairs on the Sunday, along with the junior pairs. So, yeah, there's quite a lot of bridge taking place.
Yeah, it's a shame that Masterton didn't have an open event on down there because Andrew's actually going down to Masterton. I'm going to ask you, have you had a look at the field for the South Island pairs? Have you got a podium pick?
A podium pick. It's always a tough event when you've got a big field like that. So if Miller and Graham Stout, I think they're previous winners of the New Zealand Pairs. They must be hard to beat.
Yep.
Mike Weir's just made the mixed team and he's playing with Mike Doakey from Australia.
They've had success before too.
Yep, they have indeed. A couple of early favourites for you, just browsing through the field. Your old mate Bradley Johnston is playing with Zachary Yan.
Ah, that'd be interesting.
And a pair that you often pick, Claire Mao and Wayne Burrows.
Yep. Gary Chen's playing with John Wang.
Grant Jarvis playing with Jan Cormack. All sorts of possibilities there.
Yeah. Kevin Hugh, Tim Pan.
Jeremy Fraser-Hoskin playing with Moss Wiley. Go Tislevol and Mike Cornell, who, you know, could be probably contenders for the New Zealand seniors team to go to Denmark. Blair Fisher and George Masters, yep, absolutely. John Skipper and Alan Grant, are they contenders for the senior team to go to Denmark? I'm not sure. Matthew Brown, who's probably overseas at the moment, is playing with his mum, Tanya Brown from Whangarei.
Yeah, it's going to be
plenty of
good
chances
field
in there.
Yeah, well, good luck to everybody.
I better just quickly mention Judge Julian the bailiff are in there as well.
Oh, yep. And, of course, there's you and Jenny.
If you're bored on the weekend, you'll be able to follow the results. They usually seem to have them live. interesting to see what horrible things people have got up to.
I was having a read of a book. The book is called 25 Ways to Take More Tricks as Declarer. It's by Barbara Seagram and David Bird. So what do you lead from when you've got four small or
Three
three
small.
small?
Yep.
So I know people like middle up down. I don't really like that. I prefer Boston, which is bottom of something, top of nothing. I mean, you can't really get that wrong, can you?
So I think it's probably a gimmicky name for what people play sometimes. So that's more like an attitude lead, isn't it, really, than
Yeah.
anything else? So I think you find that most of the top players probably some sort of count card. Either they play thirds and fifths or fourths. So even with three small cards, they just play the third one. Trouble with playing mud, like the second one from three is, you play the middle one. I don't know what you play next time. By the time partners figured out what the hell it is you've led from, whether it's a doubleton or whether there's three or four or whether it's the middle of three, the hand's over. I like to know straight away. And if you're playing thirds and fifths or fourths and partner leads something, at least you can get that suit sorted out, as to what the count is. That probably helps you with the others. I personally think you're better off to lead a third or a fourth if that's what your poison is, thirds and fifths or fourths. We do actually play attitude against no trump, so a low card that we really like a suit, and a higher card when we don't like it so much, or but some people just play thirds and fifths throughout. It's actually quite popular playing thirds and fifths and suits and attitude against no trumps, or maybe fourths and suits and attitude and no trumps. All sorts of things you can do, but I do prefer a count card against a suit to help you with not only that suit, figure out what's going on in that suit, but also figure out what's going on in the other suits.
For me, I prefer attitude. Nice and straightforward. You don't really have to think too much.
Well, yeah, you do. You see? So, partner leads an eight. Are they looking for a
Oh.
rut? Or have they got three? That, to me, that doesn't sound so simple. That sounds really complicated if you've got to figure out. Or maybe it's a singleton, or maybe it's a doubleton, or maybe they've got three. I mean, I don't know. So you don't know how many they've got in that. So you don't know whether they want you to return it for them to rough. I find that quite hard.
Have you ever had this issue come up when you're playing with somebody and something really weird happens and they say, "Well, actually, I had them next to my spades and just thought they flowed on a bit." So I think my tip for this week, you might want to elaborate on it, is that when you do have your cards in your hand, sort them into black, red. It sort of helps.
I've told you about a friend of mine, haven't I?
I don't know.
He worries about that people might look at where he's getting the cards from his hand. So he never ever puts them, he doesn't even sort them into suits. They're just all over the place. There's 13 cards randomly through his hand. So he has to bid like that. And then he has to play like that and defend like that. I don't know about you, but I don't think I could cope.
Oh, that
So you've got a
sounds
club
like
here and a
it.
couple of diamonds and then three, then a spade and a heart and then another diamond and two clubs and a heart and a spade and I mean, it would do my head in. So I have mine nicely sorted into four suits and yeah, it's usually black, red, black, red.
Do you actually sort them down in order, or you just clunk them all together?
I sort them into order, but sometimes they go up, sometimes they go down. It's just so long as they're in order.
Well, I remember back in the day, someone said to me, try not to put your high cards on the end, because when you pick from the end, people would say, okay, they've sorted them into the highest thing and they've gone and grabbed that one. And the other thing was that if you've got a singleton, don't put the singleton on the outside. What do you think about that?
I must admit, I don't. With a singleton, I never put it on there. Always put it in the middle somewhere. The other thing is, when you play a card from your hand and it's third from the end or whatever, don't leave a gap. I reckon maybe I'm paranoid. I put my hand together and have it sorted so that they can't see. Oh, yeah, that's the third. He must have three of those because I can see there's a gap and two more, So I don't know whether people do look at that. Once I've pulled a card out, I push all my cards together again so they're even. I might be a messy dummy, but I still like them sort of reasonably neat when they're in my hand.
We got an email from Phil Young with their tournament coming up soon on the 1st of March at the MCG. They
MCG.
are full.
MCG. They're full.
They're full.
How many have they got?
Well, I have no idea, but they're full. Didn't go and count. But yep, no more entries. And he's actually gonna make himself available to come on the Bridge Zone and tell us how it all went after it's been played.
Yes,
So that's
that will
super
be
cool.
sensational. And imagine being able to say that you held a bridge tournament and you filled the Melbourne cricket ground with bridge players. It might not be quite true, but it sounds good.
Oh, good.
I'm going to ask him
Oh.
about that when he comes on. I'm looking forward to talking to Phil. It'll
Yeah,
be great.
it should be good. He said he didn't have such a hot Congress, Gold Coast Congress farewell this year. But anyway, goes around, comes around. You always have your time to shine in the light.
There's an article, interesting article on bridge winners about somebody that went to the Gold Coast Congress from the States. I don't know whether you've read it.
Nope.
And he had a great time at the Gold Coast Congress. Stephen Castellino. And he went over there and he did well in the teams. He got through, I think, to the final. He was just amazed at the organization and the fact that they have pre-dealt hands and they have hand records and all that. It's all electronic scoring and everybody has a home tape. All of the things that everybody, all of us that go to the Gold Coast Congress just take for granted because it's so well run. He just thought was amazing compared to some of the events he's been to in the States. I don't know how many people from the States are listening to this show. Maybe they're all yelling at me now.
Did he make a comment about how many boards we actually play there?
They don't play as many boards as they used to. The only thing he said, the team has a knockout of 12 rounds of Swiss, and he said I have mixed feelings about 12 rounds of Swiss, but I did like the 14 board matches since that removes some of the randomness with, when you play an 8 board
Yeah.
match. All boards were pre-duplicated across the entire 156 team field, and scoring was on Bridge Mate, and within 1 or 2 minutes of round being completed, scores, standings, and your next assignment were posted on giant TV screens, centrally located. Very efficient, very impressive. Big
Yeah, it
ticks for the
is.
Gold Coast Bridge Congress. Pity there won't be one next year.
Bad luck. And he was actually going to do a New Zealand cruise as well.
Was he? I
My
didn't
wife
read
has
that bit.
always wanted to do a New Zealand cruise, so we thought that in conjunction with the Australian Gold Coast Congress, the stars aligned. And yes, how cool is that?
Quite like the comedy said, the cruise was fabulous, but my Gold Coast Congress experience was even more fabulous.
Yeah.
Big plus for the Gold Coast Congress. Let's hope they can put something together. As he said, he hears that the Queensland Bridge Association is working to change the decision. We can only hope that their efforts are successful and we all further enjoy this great Congress in the Southern Hemisphere. But oh, I don't know. It might be long odds, I think. Let's hope they can do something.
Coats in session. The coats in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Are you guys both tired after the weekend?
Yep.
Not as tired as we'd like to be, eh, Julie?
Oh, not as tired as we'd like to be, but it's pretty grueling, I'd have to say.
Yep.
Anyway, we've got a couple of questions for the judge. One that we haven't told Mariana about yet.
That's all right.
So one of them is those past hands from the weekend, Mariana.
Is there a law? Can you play them?
Years and years ago, in non-affiliated clubs, people that hand dealt, some clubs had a practice of re-dealing if a hand was passed in. So they
Right.
didn't sit there with a passed in hand. That was dependent on the people that dealt the hand and what they thought they should or shouldn't open. Because lots of people open hands, a variety of things, and not everybody has the same judgment. So you used to get the thing where you had to open because every hand was an opening hand. And I think there are some cases where this still happens today where people are told they're not allowed to pass it in. So this isn't really a directing question, but if it goes pass, 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 and you are sitting fourth in hand, at this point you are getting plus zero on the board. So you are getting a positive score, even if it's nothing. It is a positive score and it is match pointed. When we match point, we compare our scores against everybody else. You're not getting an average board. You're not getting a nothing board. You are getting a board that is still being compared because you have scored zero on the board. If you open it, you could easily go minor. So generally, if you're opening fourth in hand, you have a good opening bid. To the degree that, for example, if you elect to open two or three fourth in hand, you will preempting the auction so that you're playing what you think you can make and not letting your opponents get a chance to bid. So everything is different fourth in hand. And we had an epic one where we had a beginner playing on a session. This is a long, long time ago, where they got told that they had to open the bidding fourth in hand. They had a seven count. So they opened, they got doubled, and they went minus 800.
Oof.
And they were truly upset. And they told me, and I told Patrick, who stood at the front of the room and read that particular group, the Riot Act the following week, because hands are passed in. As I said, really importantly, when you pass it in, you score zero. Both sides score zero. That could be a top board for one side and a bottom board effectively for the other side. It could be average. It can be anywhere in between. So when you get to that point, there are some theories about whether you have a spade suit or not, about what you should or shouldn't do on some values, which is more of a teaching lesson rather than a directing lesson.
All
Okay?
right.
100% not allowed to redeal. And obviously, with pre-dealt hands and multiple boards around a room, that would be a director's nightmare, I would suggest. That's some unreal deals at hand.
Story's got me thinking, Julie. I know that's going to worry you,
Oh,
but
God.
just I want a game in this hand where the person fourth in hand has to, I just imagine if you were third in hand, Mariana, with a 22 count, and you knew that the person on your left who was vulnerable had to open. Wouldn't that
Yeah.
be awesome?
Wouldn't it? Yeah, absolutely. So it's like, hesitations, if we'll go on to a directing thing, where people stop to think their partner's told they're not allowed to bid. Well, then you could hesitate to stop your partner bidding. How illegal would that be, right?
Oh, now we're getting somewhere.
The other thing that occurred to me is I wonder if there are any clubs in the country that don't have pre-dealt hands. I doubt it. Maybe they
Well,
do.
possible. I remember years ago before we had dealing machines in Christchurch, we had sections. We would put out the boards and you'd deal and play board one, and then you'd duplicate it into another board and move it across to share across into the next section. So we all played the same boards and they'd write out the hands and we'd go around and frantically put all the hands together so we could create hand records. We did used to duplicate them and then play them in sections. That was a wee bit of work, but it just was a wee bit slow around one as we all got
Yeah.
everything done. But yes, it'd be interesting to know how many people don't use dealing machines now.
A couple of weeks ago, we interviewed Adam Parrish from the States, and it sounds like in the States it happens. No pre-dealt hands, no hand records.
Well, one of the things about New Zealand is we have quite large clubs. When we look at what some of the other places in the world do, maybe they have more clubs, but they have quite small numbers of tables and things,
Yeah.
apparently,
So
right?
it's not an issue to quickly add
Yeah,
that on. But
you
yes,
know.
we were surprised. Land teams in Hawaii and they had to deal the hand.
Well, that's what we used to do. We used to score by hands as well, but I haven't done that for a very long time.
Okay, so
What was your
the thing
other
that,
question, Barry?
well, we were talking on the weekend about if a person has a director's call at the club and they're not happy with the director's decision, they think the director's made a mistake or whatever, what can they do?
Quite a good question because a lot of clubs, we're volunteer directors. So what happens if you disagree with the director's ruling? Now, I'd like to make it clear that when a director makes a ruling, in general, you should say thank you for the rule, be polite, say thank you for the ruling. But if you don't agree with the director's ruling, you can say you might consider appealing or that you're not happy and you want it to be reviewed. And one of the things is about clubs is about having something in place that allows decisions to be reviewed. And also that when you are directing, that you are open to the fact that you can make a ruling in law. So if about like say revokes or something where there are very, very clearly defined set penalties that don't rely on the judgment of the director, if the director applies the law correctly, you don't really have any recourse to appeal. Because it's what the law says and it's in black and white and it's easy to print out and show. But a lot of decisions we make when we're directing will come down to our judgment about what might happen next when things go wrong or restoring equity in some cases. And that's our judgment as a player. And as a director,
Okay.
we don't have to be a good player, we don't have to know very much about play at all. We're not there to provide our playing ability. In general, that's what an appeal committee is about. It's about a review by your peers or a review by the director. That's why we poll as well, because we don't know and we're not certain, or we're not comfortable entirely, and so we will poll a couple of people. Now, when we poll people, some of the time we will want to be careful, because if somebody is not happy with the ruling at that point, then we might need to get an appeal committee, which cannot involve the people we have spoken to already. I have done a lot of directing, teaching around the country over a large number of years, and often clubs don't really have processes in place. They might have a way of reviewing something. You can call people, their internet and everything else. It is amazing how much easier it is to do some of these things. Or you can get a review from someone. Like we do at National Congress, we get a director's ruling where the directors have not only polled people, but they will have discussed it amongst themselves. And then they give the ruling. And then you can have a review of that ruling by going and talking to normally the chief director, which is Murray. And he will review the ruling that you've got, and they will generally advise you if you want to continue. Then you go and talk to a friend of court like Barry or someone that you know well for your area to get advice about whether or not you should appeal, and then you can appeal. You can always appeal, but the process now, with all the information and the sharing of trying to make really good decisions about what goes on with people that are of an ability, generally, it doesn't go to appeal. Generally, it stops at some point there, because say there's a hesitation, all right, just really briefly. If there's a hesitation, we're going to look to see if A, there was that hesitation, there was a break in tempo, B, if there was damage. So if you stop to think forever, for a long, long time, and then pass, you have taken some time. Your partner knows that you have something to think about. They don't necessarily know what that something is, but obviously in your hand there is a value that you have got some thought and you've got to think about it. Now, when it gets round to them, if they make a bid, and they are allowed to bid, to be really clear about this, to go back to what I said earlier, if their bid is a bid that everybody would make, it is completely irrelevant about how long you took to think about whatever it was that you did or didn't do, all right? If their hand has got a bid that is really clear cut, which I think at the moment is something like slightly over 80% of people of their ability or in the class of that they're playing in, then that's fine, there's no issue. Some of the time, you'll get situations where there might be two logical alternatives that are about equal, and your thinking actually hasn't helped them decide which one is the right one. For example, you take a long time to think and pass, you might be thinking about doubling. If your partner bids on, you thinking might not have been even on your radar. Okay? Mm-hmm. But some of the time, it will affect their bidding. We're not judging you. We're not judging the person that makes the bid. We are judging what people of their ability would do on their hand in this auction. It's got nothing to do, and it's a really clear cut, straightforward process, which is why we poll people to find out what those people would do and get an indication of what we think might be 80%+. Is it, or is it less than that? And then we make a ruling.
Well, that sounds easy enough, doesn't it?
I guess it's pretty easy when it comes around to you. Partner hesitates and it comes around to you and you've got six spades to the ace, king, queen. Well, it's probably okay to bid them, right? Yeah. But sometimes there's probably a point where it is difficult.
It's shaded. But the point is that thinking at the bridge table is not illegal.
Not yet.
It might be truly annoying for your opponents, because it's gone on for 3 or 5 minutes, happened at least at once, I think, this weekend. But you are allowed to stop and think. And we do have a lot of decisions we make, and some of them are hard.
Even as a player, when you have got this information and it comes around to you, if it's a margin, it's sort of a bid where you think, well, I might have bid, or what would I have done if partner hadn't hesitated? Oh, you know, it is difficult.
It can be really hard. But one of the things is, you might have been sitting there thinking, I might bid. Even without consciously thinking about it, your rose coloured glasses are keeping a deeper shade of rose all the time, the longer your partner takes. Do you get people that are positive, they would always bid? We have people that bid like lunatics. That would always be irrespective of how long the hesitation or the break in tempo is. And we know that they are. But unfortunately, they bid something that people of their calibre don't bid. And so they end up having a problem.
Some directors can be very eloquent in these situations, Marianne. And I give this example of a friend of mine who won't be listening, so I'm going to tell the story. It went round to her and the director came afterwards and it was called. And he said, look, even if you're known as Mad Christine, the overbidder, you wouldn't be allowed to bid here. And she said, but I am known as Mad Christine the overbidder.
Anyway, it's an area that creates issues for people all of the time. The process you go through is not about people personally. We're not making a judgment as a director about you. And actually, the other thing I want to do before I finish talking in this segment is, I got told by a lady from Perth when we were in the Gold Coast how much she enjoyed this show. So I'd like to say hello to everybody in Perth that is listening.
Nice.
Wonderful to know.
I was talking to a guy from Perth as well. He said sometimes out in the country there, they've got nothing to do but listen to us. So, you know. So hello to everybody from Perth.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And we shall catch up with you next week.
Okay. Have a good week, everyone.
Just give a brief update of what I'm doing with my Adam Parrish Bridge Learning Regime. I'm reading a book, 25 Ways to Take More Tricks as Declarer. That's my book for this month.
You know, I don't know why, it reminds me of that song that says 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover.
Well, that could be it.
25 ways.
Step out the back, Jack. Make new plans, Sam.
No need to be coy, Roy. Yeah, right. Anyway, we're not going to sing that because our listeners will turn off.
So I'm heading into a tournament. We're having a practice on BBO. I'm playing with John Craig, and then we are going to go over our boards, ready for our next ones.
I'm reading a David Bird book as well. I'll have you know. I borrowed it from Patrick Carter over the weekend when we were staying there. It doesn't really teach you much. It's one of the Abbott books, which are always great fun, about the bridge playing monks. It's always very funny, very entertaining. Probably I didn't learn much.
Do they drink all the sherry?
They do have a few drinks. He's very funny, very good author. David Birdie.
Well, next week we shall have some results, see how you did in this one. Good luck for this week.
And good luck to everybody else to play. It'll be a great event and we will get to meet a whole lot of people.
That's all from us. We'll catch you next week.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.